Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests.
In America, obesity has become a severe problem that affects people of all ages. While there are many diets, fitness chains, and other methods to help shed unwanted pounds, sometimes you must reach rock bottom in order to take action. One day, Joe Cross found himself 100 pounds overweight, loaded up on steroids, and suffering from a debilitating autoimmune disease. He decided enough was enough and began his journey to good health. He decided to film this transition so that he could inspire others to do the same. Along the way, he spoke to more than 300 Americans from all across the board, different occupations, different lifestyles, so on and so forth, and they told him exactly what they ate and, more importantly, what they didn't eat. And in his documentary, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, it's just amazing that you can actually watch Joe go through this magnificent transformation. So I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Joe Cross. Joe, good afternoon.
How are you? Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
You're very welcome. Joe, wow, what an amazing journey. Can you talk about yourself and what exactly was it that made you hit rock bottom?
I sure can, June. My story, to answer your last question first, what made me hit rock bottom was, I think, the fact that I was 310 pounds. I'd been taking medication night and day for 8 years. So I hit 40. I had my 40th birthday, and I had this aha moment that I really had been procrastinating that I was going to do something about this. And it had been 8 long years of outsourcing my health to other people. And I just said, you know what? You've been focusing on wealth, not health. And you got to get smart. I thought I was a smart guy, but you got to get smarter, Joe. You're a dumb man doing this, and you got to just go out there and make it happen now. Enough of the procrastinating. So I guess that was what made me hit rock bottom. But my story begins. I was born in the late '60s in Australia, and as you can tell by my accent, I was born in Sydney to a very middle class family. My father was studying to be a doctor at the time, and I had just the average upbringing that most Australian kids have in middle class. You spend a lot of time at the beach. Fast food had just started to come in the '70s to Australia. In fact, the first McDonald's didn't hit Australia till 1971, 72. And, you know, we grew up in this world that it was a real treat to go fast food, and I was kind of a big kid at school, and I got mocked a lot, and I found a lot of solace in sugar. I found that after school, when I was picked on, that me and sugar were my sort of good friends of mine. Sugar was a great, great friend. So I found a lot of comfort in sugar, and I think early on I developed this relationship with under stress or in any pain, emotional pain, that I went to the candy. And as I grew up, I played a lot of sports because, being a big guy, you know, I'm 6'2" now, and I was sort of an early developer in terms of size. I played a lot of sport. I was in the rowing crew, or, you know, what you could call crew at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking high school here, not college. I played football, or what we would call rugby. And when you're an athlete, you actually are you know, you're not so sort of susceptible to being overweight because you're doing so much work. So I kind of ate what I liked. my mum and dad were very conscious about making sure that we had our vegetables and salads, but you know, you can sort of try and force kids to do it, and we sort of did it, but it wasn't done out of love, if you know what I mean, from our end. It was done out of love from my parents' end, but not from mine. And as I sort of left home and left school, I didn't do college. I went straight into the finance world. I kind of left home at 19 years of age. And once I had that freedom, it was like, boy, you know, I'll just eat what I like. But I was still playing competitive football. And it wasn't until, I guess, my late 20s that I stopped playing football, that the habits of my lifestyle, which was drinking and eating and smoking, that I sort of went from 170 pounds to like 220 really quickly, like within the space of a year to 18 months.
Wow.
And, you know, I wasn't sick at this stage, June. You know, I was sort of master of the universe. I was trading in the stock exchange in Australia, or what we would call the futures exchange, and I'm making a heap of money at this stage. You know, I'm building my own businesses. I'm really sort of materialistic based and focused. And I'm not a bad person, but I'm not a person that's, you know, I'm a sort of product of the 80s, if you know what I mean, what was going on back then.
Of course.
In that sort of just, you know, more is best kind of plan. And so we would go to lunch and we'd have Chinese, we'd drink a couple of bottles of wine. I mean, you know, it was a big sort of a thing. I mean, this is every day. I mean, you know, it was like, you know, there's no tomorrow kind of lifestyle. And I then started working in the game of private equity or investments or you know, doing things on a much bigger scale than I had been doing, so a lot more stress, a lot more travel around the world. That meant a lot more eating in different restaurants, aeroplanes, airports, you know, the breakfast in the hotel room, the bagel and cream cheese, et cetera, et cetera. So I had this, you know, this diet that was completely processed food and animal products. I mean, you know, much to my parents' horror, I would, you know, as I say in my book, the only time I really saw any salad was on a Big Mac. So I was pretty out there. I mean, I turned my back on Mother Nature big time, if you know, to call it. And of course, the inevitable happened. And when I was 32 years of age, I'd just done a really big deal in Los Angeles, and I was excited. I rented a convertible Mustang. I bought a brand new set of golf clubs. I drove down the highway to San Diego to have a weekend of playing golf at, you know, this country club. And, you know, I'm king of the world, and music going, and, you know, hair running through the air. It's just like out of the movies. And I get down there, and all of a sudden my hands start to swell, June, and they, like, from the steering wheel. And I'm thinking, that's kind of weird. Maybe there's something in the vinyl on the steering wheel. And I didn't think much of it, and I went and had a game of golf. And then that night, my hands were like, it's as though I'd been beating on bongo drums for like 48 hours straight. They were like so very, so tender to touch, and they were starting to swell. And then it was happening in my feet. And I was a bit worried about this because I thought, this is kind of weird. So I managed to try and get some sleep, but I wasn't really able to. And halfway through the night, it was sort of up to my elbows, up to my knees. By morning, it was up to my torso. My lips were starting to swell, and I was having basically a huge anaphylactic reaction. And histamine was just being released on a massive scale throughout my whole body. And I didn't know this, of course. I know it now, but I was just having a huge sort of shock reaction. So I got straight in the car, went straight to Los Angeles Airport, got on the next plane to Sydney. It was the most uncomfortable flight of my time.
You actually flew to Sydney without going to the doctor?
Yeah, because my father's a doctor, and we've got all that in Australia, you see. So I figured that this wasn't life-threatening. It was uncomfortable.
Wow.
So I just wanted to get home. You know, I mean, I was only going to be 48 hours, 72 hours from going back to Australia anyway. And you got to think, I mean, I'm thinking I've got work to do next week. I'm not going to be stuck in a hospital. I mean, this is the attitude, right?
You could have died.
I'm in the work mode.
Yeah.
So I get back to Australia, and I get off the plane. I look like the Elephant Man when I come through customs. And I go straight to hospital, St. Vincent's Hospital in Darlinghurst, in the middle of Sydney. And I was actually put in there for 7 or 8 days under observation. They took biopsies. They did everything. They loaded me up on steroids. And look, you know, what do you know? As soon as they pumped these 100 milligrams of prednisone into me, within about 2 or 3 hours, I was good as gold. I mean, everything was gone, and here am I in the hospital bed thinking, this is fabulous. You know, modern medicine. How fabulous is this? You know, you take a pill, and you're all fixed. Let me get my clothes and get out of here was my attitude.
A lot of people share that same attitude, and unfortunately, that's what gets them into trouble because they don't think about what actually can happen to you if you keep neglecting your health. And obviously, you know, you experienced it firsthand.
Yeah, well, but see, at this stage, I'm in the mindset that I'm fixed because I took a pill.
Mm.
Okay, that's the attitude, right? That's the mindset. So I sort of said, you know, let me get my clothes and get out of there. They said, oh, no, we should keep you for a little while. I'm saying, what do you mean? So I can remember actually the week. I mean, I worked from my computer in there. I had my secretary in there, and I was just working around the clock. And that was me, you know, crazy. And what happened was is they, after a day or two of the steroids, they stopped the steroids, and they said, let's see how you are now. And as soon as they went, you know, 24 hours without having them, boom, up it came again. And that's when I sort of went, that's kind of weird. So really, that's interesting. Okay, so what do we do now? They said, well, what we'll do is we'll keep you on this for about a month to 2 months. And usually after 6 to 8 weeks, if this is not a chronic condition, it'll be gone and you'll be fine. So I went, okay, that's fine. I can live with that. So I left the hospital with my prescription for the medication and I went home. And I took the pills night and day. And I did it all for 2 months, and I didn't really think much of it, June, to be honest. I just went back to my normal life, you know. I probably had a pizza that night when I got home, to be perfectly honest.
Wow.
And I just went about my normal life, and then I went back to the doctor 2 months later, and I said, all right, he said, well, we'll just wean you down on these now. Let's take your dose from sort of 80 milligrams down to 40, and we'll see where you are. And I did that. And things were sort of pretty good for about 3 or 4 days. And he said, go to 20, and I went to 20. And as soon as I got down to that number of 20, 15, boom, it came back up again. And he said, this isn't good. You know, this kind of indicates that you've got a chronic condition as opposed to just a case of it at the time, periodic. So I was like, well, what does that mean? He said, well, for the time being, we're going to have to keep you on this medication. So that was the first time that I then went and said, well, are there any side effects to this medication? And then he sat there and went down a laundry list, which was the who's who of, like, anything from hunchback to moon face to osteoporosis to weight gain to diabetes. And I'm sitting there listening to this list going, how can this happen to me? I mean, I'm the guy who was always an athlete, healthy, you know, in my mindset, I'm thinking I was healthy, you know what I mean? Never been sick kind of thing. And all of a sudden at 32, I've got to take medication night and day. So that was kind of, all right, so when's the next pill coming out that's going to cure me was my next question to the doctor. And he sort of said, well, they haven't got anything yet. You're going to keep doing this. So that then began a search, I'd say, June, for the next 2 to 3 years, probably till I was about 35, where I effectively went around the world and spent money finding the best of the best in the US, in the UK, in Singapore. And I went everywhere trying to work out, could somebody cure me, you know, like effectively still on this vision of outsourcing my responsibility of my health to somebody else.
And that's a really great way to coin it, to outsource the responsibility of your own health.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I mean, I'm effectively walking into somewhere saying, here's some money, fix me.
Now, what did your dad say?
Well, my dad's an orthopedic surgeon, so he's, you know, if I had a bung knee, he would have been great. But he's not necessarily someone who's up to speed with the, you know, autoimmune and immunology. Obviously, he got up to speed pretty quickly, and he was... Mm. I mean, Mum and Dad were very devastated. My mother was just, like, devastated that I had this because, you know, I don't think any mother wants to see their child or kid, you know, in any illness or pain. I think that, you know, that goes without saying. But my dad's view was that, well, you know, my mum and dad always told me, you got to lose weight, you got to get healthy, you got to, you know, but let's face it, I mean, and we'll get to this later in our conversation, the idea of telling people to do something doesn't work. And that's you know, we all know that. I mean, if it was as simple as telling people to do something, June, we wouldn't have any problems in the world.
So, no, we certainly would not. But let me ask you a question. Did your friends ever make any comments to you?
Comments re my weight?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think I've ever met someone who's overweight who needs to be told they're overweight, June. I think people kind of know if you're fat. And I don't know if you know anyone. I never met anyone I needed to tell they were fat. So.
My friends will, I don't know, maybe it's just that we will, I mean, you don't insult people, but the thing is that, you know, we'll just constantly talk about, oh, yeah, this is a workout that I'm doing, or, oh, I need to do this because I really need to drop 10 pounds, you know.
Yeah,
or,
but we're talking about men here. And
hey, men are very, very, they are very concerned about their weight also. I remember in college, a few of my friends, they were guys. They decided that they were going to stop drinking beer just for a week, just to see if they could do it. And it was interesting how quickly they all lost weight. And then they decided, hey, we look really good. We're getting all these chicks, so we may as well continue down this path. And it was just kind of funny. And then they started this whole little health kick, if you will. And it was just interesting how that just came about. But I think there are a lot of men that will keep their male friends in check.
Sure.
Oh, now,
I completely agree with you. I guess the point I was going to make is that we're talking about men here in the finance business.
That's true.
That are all standing around the trading floor. They've all looked like they're going to have twins. They've all got cigarettes in their mouth and a glass of beer in the other hand.
It's like out of the movie Wall Street, the original one.
So... Now, the answer to you is, did people say to me, of course they did, and I knew, and I would yo-yo diet. I mean, I would go on diets. You know, it's not like I didn't want to try and lose that weight back then, but I would do dieting, which is, you know, diets, I think we can spend 3 or 4 hours talking about why diets don't work, but I would try all the different things, but the reality was is that I would always go back to my old ways, and when you go back to your old ways, no matter what you've done before, bang, on comes the weight again. So that was sort of, you know, that sort of view of outsourcing this health to these other doctors. And when I finally got to the point of around 35, 36, I was very dejected and realized that, you know, maybe the ball's in my court, that I've got to do something about this. And then I started doing all different things, alternative treatments. I went to acupressure, acupuncture, I did mud baths, I did witch doctors, I did Chinese herbs. I went all down that whole game. And yes, there were people who said, you know, you've got to look at your diet. But it was the one thing, June, I didn't want to let go of. I didn't want to let go of that diet. No, I was determined to see if this was something else. I didn't want to face up to the reality that, you know, how could it be the food I'm eating? How could it possibly be the food I'm eating was what I kept telling myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I said to you that I had that sort of aha moment at 40 that I kind of said, you know, this is madness. I'm moving into the zone of, like, when I was a kid at school, I used to hear about my mate's fathers having heart attacks and they were in their 40s, and I'm sort of now 40. And, you know, I have a saying that we spend the first 40 years of our life trying to kill ourselves, the next 40 trying to stay alive. And I'm the poster boy for that. So I got to 40 and I said, right, I've turned my back on Mother Nature. So I've tried everything, and it's not working. This is a slippery slope to an early departure from planet Earth. Not only that, I'm probably going to end up in hospital with tubes sticking out of me. I'm going to have more medications. I'm not going to be able to, I haven't got kids yet, but when I have kids, I'm not going to be able to be around for them. I'm not going to be able to play with them. I'm not going to be able to be active. You know, it's just, this is going to be a pretty ordinary existence for the rest of my life. So I just said, you know, that's a big enough incentive right there in all those things I just said to give myself an uppercut, which is effectively, you know, knock myself on the head and say, righto, smart enough, Joe, turn your back on Mother Nature. What would happen if you ran towards her at full steam ahead? And what does that mean? And that meant to me that what would happen if all I consumed was natural food, food made by the earth, the sun, the air, and water. And what is that food? And that food's plant food. And what does that consist of? Well, it's vegetables, it's fruits, it's nuts, it's beans, it's seeds, legumes, it's pulses. It's all of these foods that, June, you know so well about, and I'm sure many of your listeners understand, but you've got to understand that I came from a very much a place where I'm consuming 99% of processed and animal product food.
Oh, and especially in the financial arena, I mean, between the dinners and the lunches, I mean, everything is high fat, depending upon how much time you have, actually. I had many friends that worked downtown in Manhattan that lived the same lifestyle that you just described, and literally by the time that they reached 40, they decided to get out because it was that, or they would have had a fairly early funeral because it's just too much stress on the body, and it's just such an unhealthy way to live.
Yeah. Well, I then started to do the research of, now I was determined to cure myself and take responsibility and own up for my own actions, that I then started to look into it, and I kind of made it a full-time job. And once I put my focus and attention to something, I kind of feel that anything's possible. And I was determined to beat this. This became the focus. And when I heard from Professor Ron Penny, who's actually in my film, that 70% of all disease, or chronic disease, I should say, is caused by lifestyle choices, I was like, whoa, that is something that I want to find out if I'm causing this to me. And, you know, lifestyle choices are what we eat, what we drink, you know, what exercise we do, how we sleep, the stresses in our lives, or relationships and work, and all those factors, the lifestyle choices. And so that was where it was like dawned on me that, hold on a second, I'm not alone here. There's millions and millions of people in the same boat that I'm in. And how can I turn this wretched illness, this wretched disease that I'd just been, you know, sort of walking around with, tripping over my bottom lip, feeling sorry for myself for 8 years for having it, how do I turn this into a positive? And how can I help other people that are in the same boat as me? And how do I help myself first? I've got to be honest with you, June. It was about helping myself first, because if I could help myself first, then I could, by that story of success, in turn help others. So I thought, in today's world, I never made a movie before in my life, but I loved going to the movies, and I didn't know the first thing about it, to be perfectly honest, but I thought, you know, this is something that, you know, you can do, I can do this.
And you did this before all the reality shows started popping up everywhere.
Yeah, I did this in 2007 is when I shot the movie.
Mm.
So I went and did this, and I felt that having the camera on me was not only going to help me, as I said earlier, but also help others. And then that whole process of, all right, so, you know, the first step was I'm going to eat plant food. So we've got that ticked. Okay, so that's how we're going to attack the health part of my problem. That's the sick part. What about the fat part, June? How do I approach the fat part? So I asked this question of to many, many people. I said, why do we get fat? And I kept getting the same answer. Take too much energy in, don't put energy out, you're going to store it up. Mm. But that really wasn't the question I was asking. I was asking, why do we as a human species have this capacity to get fat? Like, why do we have this ability to store this energy? And to answer that question, we had to go back to, you know, the caveman days, effectively, you know, 5, 10, 20,000 years or even longer, where we didn't always have food around, and we lived off the land, and sometimes the land gave us plenty, and other times it was not so generous, and we had famines. And so the human species, the human being, developed this ability to store up energy for a rainy day. So I had a good look in the mirror, and I'm like going, boy, Joe, you've just got all this energy stored up. What are you storing it up for? You've got to bring on your rainy day. And so that logic, then I transferred that logic to the idea of taking the plant food and putting it in a liquid form. Not liquefying it via a blender, but actually extracting the liquid juice out of it. Because if you think about it, June, if you put a pear, a banana, and some kale, and squash, and spinach, and you put it in a blender, and you blend it up, and then you sort of have it as a soup or as a smoothie, all you're doing is really outsourcing the chewing of your teeth to the machine. Your stomach actually thinks it's getting the same thing as if you're eating that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the mechanism inside your gut doesn't tell the brain that you're on a fast or that there's a famine, because it feels like, because there's that fiber going in, that you're getting food. But if there's some way you can take the fiber out and only put the juice in, then you can trick the body and the brain into thinking you're in a famine, but you're still supercharging all of that micronutrient-rich produce in liquid form. Make sense?
Yes.
So that was the conceit and the idea of, let's do 60 days of just drinking this produce, then I'm going to eat it for as long as it takes to get off my medication. And that process, all up, took 5 months. 2 months of juicing, 3 months of eating only plant food, plenty of exercise when I was doing the eating part, plenty of rest, although I did make a movie, which was incredibly exhausting, but I didn't do a lot of cardio during the juicing part. And over that whole period of the 5 months, I managed to get off all medication. I've been off it since. That's 3.5 years ago. I lost 100 pounds. I've kept about 80 pounds off, so I regained about 20 pounds, of which some of that is fat and some of that is muscle. And I, today, don't get sick. I still juice. I don't juice for 60 days because you don't need to. But I juice sort of 10 days every 3 months or so, and I love it. And on the back of that with this film, it's sort of like because you know, I had this success, and I really didn't know it was going to be that success, other people started to follow. And in the movie, for those that have seen it or those that are going to watch it, I don't want to ruin it, but we have people that saw me doing what I was doing, and they rang up and asked for help, and I said, you know what? Sure, I offered you help, so I'll come and give you help. And what happens is pretty amazing, which sort of leads back to our earlier point where telling people to do something, I don't think is the answer, June. I think you've got to show. I think it's about leading by example. I think that's what this movie does in a way that I'm so very proud of, that it gives examples and it doesn't preach and it doesn't tell people what to do. It's like, I'm going to do this and other people see me, and then they do it, and other people see them, and they do it. And now we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people in America doing it. So it's very exciting.
Now, how did you come up with the recipe for the juice that you drank? And what exactly did you, I mean, was there a particular recipe that you followed for each meal, or did you mix it up? How did you go about doing that?
Okay, so I believe that we see in color simply because of fruits and vegetables. I am absolutely convinced that we see in color because of fruits and vegetables. And as we know how light and color works, the compounds of each fruit and vegetable, their different colors, have a different effect and provide numerous benefits for us. So I was a huge believer in trying to get as much of the color rainbow of fruits and vegetables into my system as possible. So when you talk about the colors, you've got reds, you've got yellows, you've got greens, you've got purples, and you've got these sort of blues, you've got different colors that you want to get pigmentations. So for me, it was about very much about mixing it up. And I did a lot of trial and error during the movie, June, I'll be honest. There was a green juice that I was told by Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who was my doctor who supervised my 60-day reboot in the movie. He was the a guy who said to me, he said, Joe, the cruciferous plant group, which is the greens, the really rich greens, he said, you're going to get more bang for your buck nutrition-wise in those, so make sure you drink lots of green. So what I would do is I would make sure that kale, that Swiss chard, that celery, that cucumber, that spinach, these sorts of plants were in most of my juices, except the one first thing in the morning. Mostly in the morning I would have watermelon, pineapple and ginger, or I'd have grapefruit, I'd have apple, orange and ginger. I like a bit of ginger, you know, spices it up.
And the fruits that you just mentioned seem to have a lot of high sugar, though.
Yeah, but we're talking about sugar that's natural from plants versus sugar that's been cooked in a laboratory that your body doesn't know how to handle.
Oh, I agree. But I'm just asking, was there a reason, especially in the morning, just to kind of give you an extra boost energetically? Is that why you opted to have more fruit in the morning?
You know, I actually think that your body is the best person to judge that. So I opted it because I felt better by having those in the morning, and it must have given me more energy during the day. It was sort of like a common sense logical thing that it made sense for me. And then throughout the day I would switch from about lunchtime to making my juices probably about 80% vegetable and 20% I would throw in some green apples just to sweeten it up a little bit. So that's probably right, but you know, I think that you're going to do a lot of exercise and movement throughout the day, so putting the grapefruits, the oranges, the watermelons, the pineapples, those citruses in early is a big benefit for that. But you know, I've got lots of people that don't like those juices in the morning. They prefer just to do the green, which is great. So it's sort of horses for courses.
That's a very cute expression. Horses for courses. I'll have to remember that, Joe.
Okay.
Well, the reason that I'm asking also is because I know that for myself, I almost always eat a banana in the morning. It's just something that my body kind of craves.
Yeah.
And if I really do not have the time for anything else, I make sure that I have the banana. And it seems to be able to tie me over. But with juicing in particular, you know, I guess, depending upon, as you said, what your body is telling you that it wants. And many people do not pay attention to what their body says. And it's interesting, if you speak to people that have had different types of illnesses that have been able to heal themselves through dietary and, you know, exercise, it's interesting that when you take a look at their diet, at their dietary intake, rather, I don't like to use the word diet per se, but when you look at their dietary intake, it's interesting that some of the foods that they opt to incorporate into their meal are foods that actually were very beneficial as far as dealing with the health issue that they were trying to overcome.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, once again, you really hit the nail right on the head when you said, you know, you were kind of going with what your body craved.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier about a lot of people try to listen to their body. I think that if you give your body the chance to really know what's good for itself, then it's much easier to listen. And I think it's very, very difficult on a diet of high processed food with lots of caffeine, sugar, salt, and fat. You know, you're going through such emotional roller coasters up and down. But to try and listen to your body, it's almost like, you know, trying to sit down and pray in a U2 concert. It's very difficult with the noise in the background. You've got to quieten that noise down. And I find that when you switch to plants only, and you don't have to juice, you can just eat plant food for 3 or 4 days, and you're going to go through withdrawals. You know, you're going to go through the withdrawal of sugars and caffeine's a killer and the fats, and you're going to do time. I mean, it's going to be painful because this is where most of us are addicted to these substances. And that's how the industry makes so much money, because it's addictive, right? You've got to keep having it.
Well, you pointed out something that's very important that a lot of people do not seem to understand. I know that when I made the transition to a plant-based diet, I went through quite a bit of a withdrawal. I was surprised how many headaches that I had. And nobody really spoke about that. And it was basically my body just withdrawing from all of the, I guess from everything that was in the food, and I eat organically, but when you go from a diet in which you're incorporating animal products, if you will, whether it's meat, cheese, what have you, to a plant-based diet, it's a complete difference. And the thing is that you also have to balance out, you know, what you do eat. As you were going through this, how long did the withdrawal period take for you?
For me, it was about 4 days of pain, real pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was probably another 7 or 8 days of medium, maybe 20% of that pain. It wasn't until about day 15... when I came back to New York City, I started to really feel good. You know, I started to really enjoy where I was at. But I was pretty sick. So this is a test that I say to people. People say to me, you know, Joe, I've got a pretty healthy diet. Why should I do a reboot? I said, well, look, that's great. I mean, you know, you've got a healthy diet relative to what? The best way to find out whether your diet's healthy is go and eat fruits and vegetables for 5 days and see if you have any withdrawals. If you have no withdrawals, then I'd say you've got a really healthy diet. If you've got withdrawals that last maybe 4 or 5 hours, yeah, you're doing pretty well. But if you've got withdrawals that last 2 or 3 days, then I think you weren't being completely honest with yourself about having a healthy diet. And it's a way that we can test ourselves. We don't need anyone to tell us. It's a perfect way. Mother Nature will let us know pretty clearly whether our diets are healthy by just switching to her diet. And if we have hers only and we feel pain, then we were doing something wrong.
Now, another question that I have is, when you were going through this transition, and obviously it's a very big change when you go from eating solid food, especially you're eating fast food, you're eating meat, you're eating all sorts of stuff, to strictly juice that is derived from plants. Did you go through the midnight cravings? Did you have any type of other issues? For example, just the fake hunger pains where your mind is telling you you're hungry, but the reality is that your stomach is not growling because you're accustomed to eating so much all the time.
The answer is yes. And the first thing is that because I didn't know much about the subject when I started making the movie, like the night before I started, June, at like 12:45, I rushed out and had 2, you know, bacon cheeseburgers with a chocolate milkshake. I mean,
wow.
That was my sort of prep, which in hindsight, with what I know now, is absolute madness. I mean, anyone who's going to attempt to juice for what I'm doing for like 60, what I did for 60 days or even 10 days, or you've got to do a couple of days of just having a high fiber fruit and vegetable diet to get the bowel ready, to get it working, to get it cleaned out, so that when you do the juicing, it can expel out everything out of your bowel. So that's point one, was that, you know, you've got to be prepared. So the questions of cravings, absolutely. Look, I can't tell you. The cravings were crazy. You know, I drove across your great country, and every road sign is a picture of a hamburger or some French fries or a big Coca-Cola or some onion rings or fried chicken and pizza dripping cheese off. And I just look at it, and here I am, like, on day 42 or 47 or 36 or whatever, and as soon as I saw it, I had the craving for whatever it was I saw. It was instantaneous and immediate.
That's, you know, that's called clever marketing. But
of course it is.
Actually, if you take any type of course or certification from the Department of Health and Food Safety and Food Handling, when you learn about how everything's made, or if you study what the certification process is, or just anything about food, how it's manufactured, I think that would turn you off enough.
Sure, you bet. But I'm sitting there because I'm a victim at this stage of that world
of
marketing.
Yeah.
And I that was my food. I mean, up until 42 days ago, say, you know, I was eating that. So it was very much like I'm sitting there going, wow, wow, wow. And remembering at this stage, I don't know how long it's going to be before I can ever have that again, because I'm going to do this for as long as it takes. And if it takes 2 years, it's going to take 2 years. I mean, it ended up taking 5 months, but I didn't know that at the time, right? And the other thing you talked about, midnight cravings, well, I mean, I can tell you, I think it was around day 45, I woke up at 4 a.m. after having a nightmare. I mean, I had an absolute nightmare that I'd eaten again. So, look, when you take food out of your diet and you go into this mode of just drinking micronutrient-rich plant food, and you're not having any fiber, and, you know, I always get asked this question, but fiber is good for you, Joe, and I agree 100%, but doing a juice-only reboot is not a diet. It's just a period of time to give your body a chance to regroup. That's why I call it a reboot. I call it because you're rebooting your system.
And it's a perfect name.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is. And many people do it not just because they want to lose weight or anything like that, but they do it, usually I'll do something like that, change of seasons. Every change of season, just basically to give my body a boost and to prepare for the next upcoming season.
Yeah, well, June, I believe, and I believe this, you know, from the bottom of my heart, that we as human beings are supposed to do this during at least 2 to 3 times a year. I really believe it, and I can back that up from looking at all of these religions that are 2,000 years old. It's all a part of religious practice, is this idea of fasting, this idea of going without. Our body is designed to take breaks, to use up the energy it's got, to do self-repair work. You know, in the movie, as I show in the cartoon, if you scratch your knee and, you know, trip over in the street and graze your knee, you don't need to send any magical powers down there to heal it, do you? All of a sudden, a scab forms, and as long as you don't pick at it and get in the way, it'll heal itself. I believe that's the same that happens inside the body. If you get out of the way, your body can heal itself. And that was my mission, and that was what I was about. So I think the idea of a reboot, this is not something new. Joe Cross didn't invent this. All I did was remember what we've forgotten.
Mm. Now, with the particular drink, because we have a question from the audience from Aaron. He asked, what was the fresh fruit drink you used during that particular fast when you first began?
The juice, well, I had lots of juices. The one that I drank a lot, the vegetable one, was kale. It had celery, cucumber, some ginger, and some apple. And I called that a mean green.
And that definitely is a mean green, but it's the kale is very high in protein. I mean, it sounds like a very, very carefully planned juice.
Yeah, that was,
it has
this
everything
was,
in it.
Yeah, I think that in the very beginning we worked out that this was a combination that gave a lot of bang for its buck. You know, it was very green, very rich, and I found it had a very alkalonic effect on my body. And for the audience that understand that, maybe a good way of describing this, you know, people have heard maybe acidic and alkaline. I don't know if you've talked about it in your show before, June, but essentially, any food, when it comes into your body, has an effect of being either acidic or alkaline. And when you have fruits and vegetables, they have an alkalonic effect on your body. But the more cruciferous they are, the stronger that is. So it's kind of like a magnet. If you think about drinking something that goes through and it just pulls everything else out with it. So in terms of going to the bathroom, which is very, very important when you're on a reboot, the high cruciferous plant group, like kale and spinach and these ones with Swiss chard, they really help to pull out the matter and the waste. So I had that. I put a lot of beetroots in as well. I mean, anything I came across on the road, I juiced. And I get asked this question a lot. Did I have organic? Did I have conventional? What do you think, Joe? And the reality for me, June, is this, is that from where I was coming from what I used to have, that my view was is that anything I can get my hands on, whether it's conventional or organic, was better than what I was having before. So being on the road, traveling across the country, going from the East Coast to the West Coast, I got whatever I could get. Sometimes I go to Walmart, sometimes I find a lovely farmer who'd invite me onto his land, and I took some amazing carrots away from a guy in Colorado. There was another fabulous gentleman and his wife in Pennsylvania who gave me some amazing spinach and celery. So wherever I went, I just went and got what I could find. And my view is that if you can afford to go organic, go organic. But if you can't, I wouldn't want people to say, well, I'm going to stick with Papa John's because Joe said you got to do organic and I can't afford it. So I'm very much trying to ensure that the message that's out there is that you know, I don't like this idea of you know, is Coca-Cola bad for you? Is McDonald's bad for you? I don't like that sort of talk. I like the idea of looking at everything in its whole. And if you have a plant-based diet during the week and you want to go to McDonald's on a Sunday night and have a Big Mac, a cheeseburger, knock yourself out and enjoy it, is my view. It's not something that you should, like, berate yourself about. But it's all about what are you doing in terms of plant food consumption in your total diet. The average American is having 5% of their calories are fruits and vegetables. That's why we have a $2.5 trillion health care cost every year in this country. It's as simple as that.
Oh, of course. Well, luckily, because of the economy, more people are growing their own vegetables, so the cost of organics really has dropped significantly. Many people, I mean, depends upon the location where you live, but organic has become so mainstream, and there are so many classes that are offered to teach people how to grow their own food. And what's interesting is that in certain pockets of the United States where it is very poor, the one thing that's very interesting is that while these folks may be struggling to keep the electric on because they're growing their own fruits and their own vegetables, and they have fruits from the trees that are on their land or on neighboring properties, food is actually something that is not as much of a concern as it used to be, and that's because they are trying to cut corners, and one of the best ways to cut corners is to grow your own food. I mean, it requires labor. It's not like you could plant seeds and then you get a full garden overnight. It takes a lot of work. But the thing is that there's so many things that you can eat that the marketers have taught us, oh, they're bad, like dandelions. Dandelions are tremendous. Do you want to have an entire drink made out of dandelions? I wouldn't advise it. It is a diuretic, but the thing is that you can incorporate the dandelion greens, the dandelion flowers, into any of your juice recipes, and they're tremendous.
Yeah.
They're, in my opinion, I think they're more beneficial than eating cranberries as far as blocking and or unblocking anything that you may have that's blocked.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of research done. I actually spent quite a bit of time researching the healthful benefits of dandelions.
Yeah, well, once you get into this world, June, for the people that, you know, are starting off, look, the big benefit, and what my message is, a pretty simple one, is let's try and increase our consumption of fruits and vegetables. And a great way of doing that is by adding juicing into your daily life. You don't need to do a reboot all the time. You do a reboot every 6 months. I do one every 3 months, but, you know, that's me, because I feel like it. I like it, and I just like going to the top of the mountain and I love the view from up there because of the clarity. But, you know, a reboot can help people who want to lose weight. It can help people who want to get off medication. And as you said earlier, just for yourself, it can help someone who just wants to feel better, just to do, like, a spring clean. And therefore, what I feel that we've got this opportunity to do here, which juicing really hasn't taken off in the mainstream in America, and I'm hoping that by introducing that, kids love it. You know, we talked about, I always get asked, June, about cleaning the machine and what machine to get.
That's my question.
Yeah, it's always a big issue. And the reality is that these machines, you know, they're very difficult to clean, depending on whether you've got a masticating juicer or a centrifugal. And the difference is one that's a press that sort of pushes the produce together. The other one is one that spins. And that separates the fiber from the juice in a spinning way, a bit like a washing machine or a dryer does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the masticating juices are much more expensive than the centrifugal ones, and there's a reason for that. They do, I think, probably get more juice out of the produce. So in the long run, if you spend the more money on the more expensive machine, you're going to get more output from your input. But it can be quite a big investment. And I'm always conscious of these days, with people with lack of money, that start off with, you know, one that's more like, you don't want to go too cheap, because you go too cheap, then you're not getting enough juice out, and then it's going to cost you too much money in the produce. So, you know, one that's around $150, $200, which might sound like a lot, but over a period of a year, it's kind of like 70 cents or 65 cents a day. And I figure that that is a worthwhile investment in your health. It's almost like this is not a machine that's for the kitchen. This is a machine for your health and for your family's health. And so I sort of suggest and recommend people to go down that path. I used a Breville juicer in the movie. They're a great juicer, but you know what? There are plenty of other juices out there that are great. And I don't want to sort of, you know, position myself as a guy selling products. I really want people, if they can go out there and get their hands on one, even if it's secondhand on eBay or whatever. I noticed that since the movie's come out, their prices on eBay have all skyrocketed. So I feel that if you can do that. Now, on the cleaning side, people don't realize that you can actually juice 3 days worth of juice and store it in the fridge, as long as it's cold, so in the fridge, and completely sealed. And that's the trick. No oxygen whatsoever. And you want to try and fill them to the top. Use glass bottles if you can and seal it, and then it will last.
Can you freeze the juice, Joe?
You can freeze the juice as well, yes. And, you know, you can actually give your kids popsicle in this kind of heat we're experiencing now on the East Coast. So there's lots of ways of doing it. And for those people that are frightened about just doing juice only or on medications, and they, you know, I really encourage everybody who wants to do more than sort of 10 days to go and see a doctor if they're going to do that, then just eating the fruits and vegetables and making smoothies out of a Vitamix and doing that, that's also a great start. You're not going to get the weight benefit loss as much, but you can really get the health benefit and the feel-good benefit when you blend.
Joe, we have another question from the audience, and I think this is important. About how many ounces should you drink at once? I mean, does it depend upon whether you're male, female, a child, your weight? How do you determine how many ounces?
And I actually switch between diluting my juices with water and other times just having them whole. I was drinking 6 20-ounce juices a day. I was putting lots of ice in them, so that actually did dilute them a little bit, keep them cold. I prefer a cold drink. I know a lot of people tell me, Joe, you're better off not having cold drinks. Room temperature's the best, but, you know.
And Ayurvedic medicine, they talk about that, but, you know.
I figured I was already making a step in the right direction. Tune by. So I sort of let that one go through to the keeper. And I would sip on my juices, and I only have them when I felt like I needed it. I didn't force it down at any time. I just had it there and I sip on it, and sometimes I wake up in the morning and I went, wow, I really need to just hammer this, and I would just go bang. Other times it would take me an hour and I put more ice in and keep it going. And, you know, and by the way, cleaning juices, I'm telling you, if you can clean them on the road like I did, you can clean them in your kitchen. It's tough, but it can be done. And remember, no pain, no gain, June, is my saying.
I will remember that, and I will confess that I did make a comment before the show went live that my juicer is very tricky to clean. It's pretty old, but it was a really expensive juicer at the time, and if you don't clean, there's so many little nooks and crannies, and you literally, it'll take quite a bit of time to clean it, so primarily why I haven't juiced as much as I do. But usually in the fall when I have my pears are ripe and I'm harvesting my vegetables, I have so much that, you know, it just kind of makes sense because you can really go through a lot of produce very quickly when you're juicing.
Yeah.
Now, question, how much money would the average person spend, would you say, how much would you spend as a man on juicing for, say, a week?
So during the movie, we kept count of this. I was spending roughly around $28 to $30 a day on my produce.
That's really very cheap. Most people, I mean, you'll spend $30, you'll spend more than that on cocktails.
Yeah. Well, that's the, you know, and obviously now what's happening is you've got juice bars that are popping up all over the country. And particularly here in New York City, there's places like the Juice Press, Organic Avenue, Liquiteria, and, you know, in Los Angeles, they're popping up. They're popping up all over the country, and I really believe this is a great business. Anyone out there who's out of work or thinking about trying to get into something, I mean, get a juice bar going in your local town or at your local farmer's market. Just buy a buy a Breville juicer, go along and get a stand and get the produce at a farmer's market on the weekend and start making juice.
I've seen them actually at many different events, and they are very popular, and people will buy them.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense, especially since the climate is changing and people are starting to understand that, yeah, this is a better option.
Yeah.
I think more people such as yourself that are out there that are advocating better options, especially with a plant-based diet, they really do see the healthful benefits. Now, one quick question, because we are running out of time. One of the other comments from the audience, this is from Jean Kelsey, she wrote, how do you approach people who you know are walking down the road to bad news to help change their mind?
Okay, so I think what I have given that, the advice I've given there is that it's a very difficult one. You've got to be very, very careful. And what, now that I've made this movie, and you know, I don't want to sound on your show that I'm promoting, but it really is happening, and anyone's just got to go to my Facebook page or join my Reboot community, which is jointhereboot.com, and have a look at the thousands and thousands of people that are doing this. And I get emails every day from parents saying, I can't believe, Joe, my son who's 350 pounds and hasn't got off the couch, watched your movie, he's now bought a juicer and he's down 50 pounds. So it's got to come from within, June. It has to come from within. And if watching my movie, it's not going to do it for everybody, but right now from what we're seeing, it's doing it for a lot. Because it's kind of that attitude, well, if Joe can do it and the other people in the movie can do it, I can do it. So I think it's about inspiration, and I think it's about leadership, and I think it's about caring and providing support. It's about giving the tools. It's not about telling people what to do. It doesn't work. People are sick of it. People are sick of being told what to do.
So can you talk about your Reboot program? How long does it take, and what's involved?
So we have this website which we've set up, which is free, and it's www.jointhereboot.com. And I think there's about 60,000 people that have signed up there already in a very short space of time, so it's really rapidly growing. And the website, I'm spending a lot of money on it, so people who go there now just realize there's a new one coming. I didn't realize it was going to be this popular, to be honest, June. Anyway, what happens is we've got three different types of reboots that are there. You can do an entry level, which is 5 days. You can do what I call a 5-5-5 reboot, which is 5 days of eating fruits and vegetables, 5 days of juicing, and 5 days of eating. Or you can do a reboot custom, which is just drinking juice only. You need to do a bit of preparation, and people are doing 20 days, 30 days, 60 days, and people are really taking to this like a fish to water. I mean, they're really getting into it. So a lot of there, I've got a nutritionist that's on there now, and she's very supportive and helping answer questions. Obviously, because it's got so big now, I've got to try and staff up. I've got to get some more money into it, and I've got to do a lot more work, June. But I'm working around the clock trying to make that better. And what's great to see though is the community, is the people who have done it are in there supporting people, and they're helping and sharing the knowledge, which is really what I set this whole thing up for, to pay it forward and to have people. Because once you do 30 days of juicing, trust me, you're an expert. You can help anybody. And you know, the secret to happiness, in my view, is being useful. And so people who have been on the couch that have felt like they're carrying around 100 pounds or 200 pounds too much, once they start seeing that change, once they wake up in the morning, they've got that spring in their step, it's a massive lift to their emotional system, and they want to get out there, they want to exercise, they want to help people, they want to share. And that's really what the reboot is all about. That's the movement that I'm trying to create.
Thank you, Joe. Folks, we're out of time, but if you'd like to connect with Joe, please visit www.rebootwithjoe.com, and you can also check out his second movie, which is Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead 2. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Don't forget to check out our contest section on our website, which is www.theorganicview.com/contests. Have a great afternoon.